Oh, shall I go on to another story?
Yeah.
Okay, this one is from Italy and is called Solomon's Advice. A long time ago, in a faraway land, there lived a man who was a shopkeeper. He had three sons and was pretty happily married. One day, he went to his shop to open up, as he usually did early in the morning, and he stopped in horror. There was a corpse lying on his doorstep. He panicked. He thought if he summoned the authorities, they would think that he had killed this person, and so he ran away. He ran as fast as he could and didn't stop until no one knew where his village was. Nobody could recognize where he lived. And so he thought he'd better settle there and look for a job. He finally took a job as the manservant for a man named Solomon. Now, Solomon was a very wise man, and people came from all over the world to ask for his advice and pay for his advice. Well, for 20 years, the shopkeeper worked as Solomon's servant, and never once did he ask for his wages, because he trusted that Solomon would be keeping the accounts, and he got food and everything taken care of. But after 20 years, he felt he was a little bit homesick, and so he thought he'd go home to see what was going on with his family. Well, Solomon was quite happy to let him go and said, well, your wages are 300 gold coins for the last 20 years. And the shopkeeper was overjoyed because this was quite generous. And he started to leave when Solomon said, oh, but wait, you know, people come all over the world to buy a bit of wisdom from me. Don't you want to ask some advice from me? So the shopkeeper thought this was a good idea and gave Solomon the usual fee, which was 100 gold coins. Then Solomon thought a moment and said, don't leave the old road. What? The shopkeeper said, that's your bit of wisdom? Stick to the old road? I already knew that. That's 100 gold coins? Is that what you tell people? Well, he thought he'd buy another bit to see if he could get something better. Solomon thought a moment and said, don't meddle in other people's affairs. The shopkeeper was livid. How can you give me that? That's such trite stuff. And I paid 100 gold coins for both of them. And Solomon said, well, that's so that you remember them. Well, you had only 100 coins left, sir. He said, well, why don't you take the rest and give me whatever third one you have? Solomon thought a moment and said, put off anger till the next day. Of course, the shopkeeper was about to blow up. He turned in a huff to leave, and Solomon said, wait, don't go. I don't want you to go without anything for 20 years of work. So take this little cake and just eat it with your family when you get back home. So the shopkeeper angrily stuffed it in his bag and left. Well, he walked a long way, because it was a long way back to his village, and he came across a group of travelers who were having a good time. They were young and merry and drinking and singing songs and traveling the countryside, seeing the world, and they said, why don't you join us? And he thought, oh, that's a great idea. I could always go back home, you know, a little later. And then he thought, oh, but I paid $100 gold coins for the advice of don't leave the old road. I might as well make use of it. I mean, otherwise, I would waste this money. So he declined, and the two parties separated. The man went along his way, and then he heard screams and gunshot in the distance. He climbed a tree and looked and saw just down the other road, his new friends had just been murdered by highway robbers. And the man had a pistol, but he didn't dare go by there, and he thought, thank God for Solomon's first bit of advice. I would have been killed. So he walked further on and on until night came, and he was in the middle of a big wasteland. But he saw a little light in the distance and went up to it, and it was a small cottage. So he knocked, and a gaunt man came to the door, kind of gruff. Well, it was the custom to give hospitality to strangers. So the gaunt man, without a word, ushered him in and set a bowl of soup and bread before him. Well, as they were eating, they finished, then the gaunt man went to a door, opened it, and there were stairs leading down, and brought out a blind woman. And then he gave her a human skull with soup in it. And so she drank it, and then he let her go back down and locked the door again. And then he asked the shopkeeper, whoa, what do you think of that? Of course, the shopkeeper was horrified. What is going on here? How can he do this? Oh, but I paid 100 gold coins for Solomon's advice, don't meddle in other people's business. I might as well use that. So the shopkeeper said, well, you must have reasons. And the shopkeeper, the man said, yes, this is my wife, and the skull is that of her lover. I came back from a trip and found them together, and I killed him, and I blinded her, and locked her in the basement, and feed her from the skull of her lover. What do you think of that? You must have your reasons, the shopkeeper said. Good, the gaunt man said, and pointed outside to a cemetery full of graves. Anybody who disagrees with me, I kill. And so the shopkeeper thought, thank God for Solomon's second bit of advice. So the next morning, as soon as it was light, he fled the house and walked and walked and walked till he finally came back to his own village. It was midday by then. Yeah, midday. And he went back to his house, and then he saw his wife and the widow embracing a young man, and he became livid. What? She's taken another husband and a young one? He drew his pistol to shoot them both when he remembered the 100 gold coins he spent on Solomon's third bit of advice. Put off anger till the next day. He thought, well, that's trite, but I paid 100 gold coins for it, so I might as well use it. So he put his pistol away and then ran and knocked on a neighbor's door and asked, oh, who is that lady there? And the neighbor said, oh, that poor woman, her husband disappeared 20 years ago, so she had to raise the kids all by herself. And now her youngest child was just ordained a priest, and so they're having all these festivities. And the shopkeeper thought, I would have killed my son and my wife. Thank God for Solomon's third bit of advice. So he went to his home, knocked on the door, and they opened it, recognized him immediately. They welcomed him with open arms. This is a fairy tale, remember? And they all sat around talking stories. And then the shopkeeper remembered the cake from Solomon. So he took it out of his bag. Amazingly, it wasn't crushed. And he started to cut it up so everybody could have a slice when 300 gold coins rolled out. Isn't that nice? Any thoughts or reactions to this one? Yes.
Oh, I would only say, only 300? when you're in tune with the universe, you know, you could be tell.
Well, the story centers around the issue of the shadow or evil, and it's striking, it shows the development of different ways of dealing with evil. It starts off with the man finding the corpse on his doorstep and running away. And this is typically what we do when we're young. We either repress something evil or deny it or look away. Well, he then runs off and works 20 years with Solomon's as Solomon's servant. And of course, I think most people can readily identify people who, you know, are emotionally at work for 20 years and don't pay attention to their family. So this is surprisingly modern. But Solomon is a very wise man, but he gives the shopkeeper these three trite sayings. Any thoughts about that? I mean, Solomon, you know, the biblical wisdom, but he gives stuff like put off anger till the next day. Any thoughts or reactions?
Well, things get trite for a reason.
Things get trite for a reason. They're true and tried. I suppose that's why Jungian analysts charge so much. Yes, he's telling things that we already know, but it's sort of like putting a frame around a picture. It suddenly seems more important, especially if it costs 100 gold coins. Yes.
The part about the cake, so often in the fairy tale that there is something that they don't value, but they were given by some older person or something, and they overlook it until that moment they need it, and then it is more of a treasure.
The comment was, in many fairy tales, something that looks ordinary or is ignored turns out to be a treasure. And it's sort of like that's the fourth bit of advice or wisdom, that he didn't think it was anything, but it had all his life savings in it. Yes.
You called the fork that he finds it. Excuse me, that he finds at his door a evil. But he was a young man there, and young people are afraid of death and think of it as something evil or horrifying, and run away from the night. And then 20 years goes by, and so he's a wiser man. And so when, even though he at first put aside Solomon's advice to him, when the time comes, he sees the wisdom of something that he really knew, that he came to learn. And I think so the important thing is the 20 years that he has run away from something, not the story, so it's a metaphor of running away from the important thing.
I think that's a good point, that initially he ran away from evil or the shadow or death, which is what we usually do as young people. But 20 years later, he can now face the shadow side with his greater maturity, because presumably Solomon's wisdom is also his own. Yes?
Going a little further with that, he has to separate himself from his guru and integrate that in his own experience and make it really work for him.
You kind of have to leave home before he can grow up. Yes.
I don't the second story, the idea of, you know,
stand up, please, or speak up.
Your wife in the basement drinking, you know, something out of the skull of your ex-lover, you know, is beyond me. You know, why you could accept this and move on. But this I can't handle. You know, why he could, you know, move on, you know, and not do anything about that. Why he was, I think being non-judgmental is quite a virtue. This is gone.
You would have been killed. That's an excellent point, that this is such a horrific thing. How could he tolerate it? And it would seem like, oh, well, the story's saying it's more relativism, right? Just save yourself, like he didn't go help his friends, even though he had a pistol. But the end of the story shows it's not moral relativism, because he is able to control his own impulse to shoot. Because like this man in the cottage acted on impulse, killed the lover, and then blinded his wife. The shopkeeper has a similarly vengeful impulse, but can control himself. So I think it's more saying not that this is not horrible or ignore it, but he can't do much about it.
So it's an acceptance that you're really not in control of it.
Yes, because he wasn't.
How do you know when you're in control when you're not?
Oh, I reveal that in the third talk.
Is that the origin that love is blind?
Why don't you repeat that?
I simply these were projections, or whatever they call it. Not necessarily evil as the man who killed his wife, but maybe we're thinking our own thoughts and rejecting them for the wisdom we have.
I think that's the good point, that these are you could take them as inner figures, so that Solomon would personify his own wisdom, and this horrifying man would be like his id coming out, or, you know, nightmares or dreams or fantasies of revenge we all have. Yes.
I think it's clearly an indication of Myers-Briggs typology, and that he's clearly a J.
Yes.
The three pieces of advice have to do with withdrawing projection. You know, the projection that this new road would be better than the old road.
Yes.
Projection is what was going on, and then
and his wife, you know, the skull, particularly the projection that the man that he saw with his wife was a lover, when in fact it was his son.
I think that's a good point, yes, that these would be projections. Yes.
I just want to say that when you were talking about impulsivity, I think each instance of the fear that he didn't have the restraint of maturity could have done a tremendous amount of damage to himself or to other people. And the complex of between impulsivity and restraint over each of the situations would have been more and more great. So that if he had really killed his child and his wife and hadn't been able to restrain himself, he would have had to live with what he was running from in the very beginning, which is fear of being accused.
Yeah, each time he does refrain from an impulse, like an impulse to join the other group because they seem like they're more fun, but he was able to draw back that projection, then an impulse to say, what are you doing, you horrible, evil person? And finally to control his impulse to kill his son, which Freudians would have something to say about, but I don't.
I don't know how he would leave this body for his wife to come in and then 20 years later expect she hasn't gone on with her own life.
That's an excellent point, and that's why it's a fairy tale. Yes.
If it's looked at in kind of a projection, each of the three, it seems like he's saying that the man had originally run away from evil, and that he was kind of saying to not run away, but to stay on the same path and to just keep going forward back into the old. And that as he would, he came to something where he did see it in the other, and it was a projection, but he had to acknowledge that it existed and live with it and not run away. And then it wasn't until he could acknowledge it that then he could see it in himself, experience it in himself, and then be able to transform it and wait and see what it was going to come in, you know, what it was going to become. And it was that his son, which is an offshoot of him, had then grown to become a priest. And it was just such a beautiful transformation. That's the point.
I had a comment, but I forgot what it was now. That's midlife. Yes.
I'm imagining there may be some anti-church religious symbolism in that. So perhaps the woman was forced to drink from the cup of the priest, and this person has a churchyard. Burial place, just a little bit, but, you know, in a country like Italy, you have to be very careful to express such views. What do you do as a
parent? I think that's a good point. It's like drinking from the skull is like a parody of communion. We'll see that in a story tomorrow where it's quite clear that it is a parody that goes on and on. It's really hilarious. But again, it's like was said earlier, it's the task is to face evil and stay there, which is really hard. The young hero usually just tries to kill the evil thing. Yes?
One thing that I found fascinating is somebody might have said something about this because we can't always hear back here. It's the fact that he would go back to Solomon three times, given everything he had. And I would like to hear your views about how he is buying education or buying experience as giving everything else away when he doesn't value it at the time. Each time hoping to get something and then eventually giving everything and walking away with what he got was nothing. How can we make a parallel between that and what we do with our lives in the sense that we give so much and appear to get so little back in education? I don't mean formal education, but in learning.
Former education, probably too. But the issue is, how could he pay more money after getting such a rotten advice? As we'll see in other stories, there, I think it indicates that there is a wisdom operating in him that he's not aware of, and that he does something impulsive in this case, like, oh, you might as well take the rest of my money, which turns out to be the right thing, as opposed to shooting his son. So again, the question is, which impulse do you follow? And as we'll see in other stories, the key element is being able to face the evil in yourself. And after that, then you can trust your impulses more. Yes?
Buy any advice like gambling?
Well, in a way it was, right? I mean, he thought, oh, next one I'll get a better one. The other thing could be, he could have, on some level, trusted that Solomon had some plan or wisdom. And obviously, Solomon was clairvoyant in this case.
Would you say something about the 300 coins, the three pieces of advice, the repetition of three very often in fairy tales?
Yeah, the question was, the comment was, that three occurs so often, and what might that mean in fairy tales? There's sort of the simple-minded answer, which is, well, if it was once, that wouldn't be very interesting story. If it was 10 times, that'd be too long. So three is just right. But it's also another element of, three is a good symbol for a competition, like the man, the wife, and the lover, and the struggle around that, or the triangle, yes. And then there's numerology symbolism, which I don't know too much about. Do we have time for one more story, or? Not one more story? Okay. Now this story has a double cultural source. It's from a Jewish source in India, from the Jewish community that's lived a long time in India. And this is called The Golden Tree. Once upon a time, there lived a great king who had five wives. But he loved the youngest one best, which left the four senior queens jealous. So they started plotting on how to get rid of this new queen. So they talked to the king and said, oh, you know, she hasn't borne you any children, which was true, and that's because she doesn't love you, which wasn't true. But eventually he started to believe them, and he summoned his youngest queen to him and said, I realize you don't love me, so I am exiling you from the kingdom. You must leave now. Well, the queen was horrified. She protested, but the king wouldn't change his mind. So she was put outside the city with just the clothes on her back. But she was brave, so she just walked and thought she'd walk and see where she'd go. She walked and walked, and when nightfall came, she found herself in this deep forest. And she was a little bit afraid, because India has tigers, so she thought she'd climb a tree and sleep there. How you can do that, I'm not sure, but anyway, she slept in the tree all night. In the morning, she climbed down safe and found an old man standing at the foot of the tree. She was about to run away in fright when he said, oh, don't run. I mean you no harm. And he had such a kind voice, she stopped. And he asked her, what are you doing here? Nobody ever comes this deep in the forest. So she explained the situation, how she had been exiled, and it was all the more unjust because now she knew she was pregnant with the king's child. I guess she had an EPT thing with her. Well, the wise old man then said, well, why don't you come live with me? Perhaps the king, your husband, will come to his senses and come looking for you. So he brought her to a little hut in the middle of the forest and made a new room for her and a new bed and brought food of nuts and berries, which is what he lived on. She was exhausted. She ate. She fell asleep immediately. And she had an amazing dream. She dreamed that she was walking in the most beautiful garden she's ever seen and came to a pool of water that was crystal clear and calm, and in the middle grew a tree that was gold with diamonds for leaves and flowers. She had never seen anything so magnificent. And then an old man, the very one she had met that day, appeared in the dream and gave her a little amulet in the shape of this golden tree and then disappeared. Well, the queen woke up the next morning and felt something around her neck, and she looked down, and it was an amulet, just like she had dreamed about. So she realized that this old man must have been someone sent to help her from the divine powers. Well, she lived and helped him out with the household chores and found that he had a somewhat strange hobby or trade. He was actually a goldsmith and jeweler, so he would gather jewels, gold and silver in the forest, and then make beautiful jewelry, always in the shape of a tree, and then melt it down and make something else again, make another tree. And the queen asked him, well, why don't you take these to the city and sell them? They're so beautiful, they get a great price. And the old man said, oh, I need no money. I just like creating things. Well, in due time, the queen gave birth to a baby boy, the king's son. And far away that night, in his palace, the king had a dream. And he dreamed that he saw a huge golden tree with diamonds for flowers. And on the tree trunk of burnished gold, he saw the reflection of his youngest queen. And he realized how much he missed her. But as he approached the tree and the reflection, they would both vanish. Well, night after night he had this, until he became tormented by it, missing his youngest wife more and more. So he summoned all the wise people, the astrologers, the therapists, the economic forecasters, and asked them the meaning of this dream. They pondered and pondered and pondered and then said, well, obviously you made a mistake sending the queen away, so you must send people out to search for her, and wherever she is, probably this miraculous tree will be too. So the king sent out heralds everywhere to all the lands, but nobody ever heard of the queen or a golden tree, and he still kept having the nightmares. So he summoned all his advisors again, and they pondered and pondered and then said, well, since that didn't work, what you must do is have the craftsmen in the kingdom build you a tree just like that, and once you get it, you'll be satisfied. So the king opened the treasury, got all the jewelers to come in and use everything in the treasury, and they labored day and night, and finally they finished and unveiled this magnificent golden tree before the king. But his heart was broken because it was nothing compared to the dream in his tree, the tree in his dream. That's actually a significant slip, but I'll come back to that later. And this tree brought him no joy or anything. So all the wise people, again, came together, pondered and pondered and said, well, you have to go yourself and look for the queen and this golden tree. And so the king that day left his palace all alone and traveled, asking everywhere if anybody had heard of the queen or seen her or of this golden tree. Well, for days and days he went until he was barefoot, and he would beg for food, and his clothes was in tatters, until he came to a huge forest. And there he met an old man. And the old man said, oh, what are you doing in this forest? Nobody ever comes here. Guess which old man this was. And the king said, oh, he explained his quest. I unjustly exiled my youngest wife, and now I'm searching for her, and for a golden tree I dream about. And this wise man, who had taken the wife in much earlier, said, well, I know about the golden tree, but I'm not sure about your wife. But come to my house. I will feed you. You're hungry and tired. And then I will tell you how you can find this golden tree. So the king followed the old man. They came to the hut, and the queen was there with the young son, but she wore a veil. That's what the story said. So the king didn't recognize her, and she said nothing. Well, the old man fed the king and then told him, the golden tree grows at the headwaters of the stream that runs just outside my hut. If you follow the stream up to its source, you will find the tree. The only problem is, the closer you get to it, the hotter the water becomes and the more sulfurous and toxic. Many men have tried to go there and all have died. But I will help you. I will give you my shoes, and if you walk in them, you will be safe from the fumes and the heat. But you must bring back the shoes, otherwise everything will be for nothing. The king thanked the old man, took the shoes, and started on his way. And sure enough, as he went further and further up the stream, it became hotter and started to smell horrible and toxic, till he finally came to this huge boiling cauldron of water. And in the middle was a golden tree, exactly as he had dreamed, so magnificent he could hardly believe his eyes. But he wanted to touch it. So he put on the old man's shoes, stepped into the boiling water, and wasn't harmed. And he managed to swim to the tree And there he discovered that it wasn't a tree, but it was a fountain of molten gold that would shoot up, form into branches, and then they would all fall down and melt again and shoot up again. He had never seen anything so amazing, and reached out and touched the branch, but he didn't get burned, it just came off in his hand, and so he swam back to shore. He had in his hand this magnificent branch of this miraculous tree, but he was no happier than before, because he told himself, "What use is this branch, because I have not found my youngest wife?" But he remembered that he had to take the shoes back to the old man, so he trudged back to the hut, and the old man greeted him and said, "You have done what no other man has done. You've touched the golden tree." And the king said, "Well, it doesn't matter, because I haven't found my youngest wife, and I realize that's more important than this tree." And then the queen stepped forward and said, "You sent me away, but I have come back, and here is your son." Well, the king fell to her feet and begged her forgiveness and asked if she would come back with him to the palace. So she agreed. They thanked the old man, went back to the palace, and the king, the story says, sent away the other four queens and made the young one the only one, the only queen. And then they lived happily ever after. This is a long, complicated one. It starts off like stubborn husband, stubborn wife, with the husband in a traditional role of being in charge. He's even more in charge because he's got five wives. And then he exiles the youngest wife unfairly. And it kind of symbolizes, lots of actual stories show this, that women have a very tenuous position in society. She's quite brave, though, and goes out to the forest and meets the wise man. So she makes direct contact with his source of wisdom, whereas the poor king has to go through all these nightmares and all these dreams, journeys, and stuff before he comes to him. And this is actually a theme that comes up in fairy tales a lot, that for some reason women have direct contact with the unconscious, either through nature or something, whereas men have to go through this long journey before they finally get there. The other way this theme comes up is that she dreams of the golden tree and then wakes up and apparently brought an amulet back from the dream. So she has direct contact here with the unconscious. Whereas again, the king has to go through this long, arduous trip up the river and with the shoes and everything. So there's a striking gender difference here, which comes up in other stories too. Well, the queen also gets new life once she's out of the city, and it's a theme that appears in not only fairy tales, but women's fiction, fiction written by women, that women find healing away from civilization, which makes sense because civilization is usually patriarchal. Any thoughts or comments so far about? Yes. Yes, I think that's a good point, that of the two trees in Genesis, the tree of knowledge and the tree of life, this is probably the tree of life, because the reason I think that is because she brings back this amulet from the dream world, and the tree of knowledge would presumably be the one that distinguishes dream from reality. But this one violates that, so it's probably the tree of life. And then at the end, that image of the fountain is certainly a good symbol for a primordial life energy or life force. And so the queen makes direct contact with this tree of life, whereas the king has to go through this arduous journey to get there. And he has to give up all his privileges to do that.
He does bring back a branch.
He does bring back a branch, yes.
He gets something.
Does he bring the branch back?
Yes, he brings the branch back. You can still see it. It's in the State Museum of...
Yeah. In a lot of fairy tales, the king has a princess to marry off, and the princes who are vying for her hand have to do some journey and bring back some proof that they achieved it. And this reminds me of that.
That's right, that they have to prove their worth. Here, he has to undo this horrible injustice he did. So it's kind of a mirror image where he has to deal with his shadow side and his mistakes, which he's willing to do. I mean, it really is a fairy tale because the king asked for forgiveness. Yes.
All three of these tales, the
people learn their lessons very well, and we have very happy endings. Are there many tales where people do not learn their lesson well and have cautionary tales? What is the proportion? What would you say about these elders?
Technically, the question is, are there fairy tales that have bad endings or unhappy endings, or do they all end happily? They all end happily because by definition fairy tales end happily. Those with unhappy endings would be ghost stories, horror stories, tragedy. They're technically different. But also these fairy tales portray ideal development when everything goes right. They do have negative figures often, as we'll see in elder tales, of the two characters, one who does the right thing and the one who doesn't do the right thing, and they show how they diverge, and the one who does... Yes, the cautionary tales.
I wanted to say that history is really written by the people that have succeeded. If they started it. History is written by the
The comment was that history is written by the victors, and so are fairy tales, that they're written by the people who succeeded.
The story says that the king must put on the shoes of the old man to get to the goal. And then he gives them back and he's able to walk on his own.
Yeah, the symbolism of the shoes is quite interesting. Notice the shoes again, like with stubborn husband, stubborn wife. It turns out that shoes pop up a lot in middle stories, and they always have this same implication of something very prosaic that's essential. Now, shoes occasionally appear in stories about young people, but they're always magic shoes, you know, like the Seven League boots or Dorothy's magic slippers. These shoes have no magic power. They're rather a symbol of grounding. And I think like walking in the old man's shoes would be like following a discipline, like meditation or some spiritual training, so that you would not be destroyed by this direct encounter with the divine. And he has to bring it back, otherwise he wouldn't find his queen.
But to walk in the old man's shoes, he has to be in touch with the soul.
There's a comment back there. The old man has this peculiar hobby or job where he creates things and then destroys them and then creates them again. That's exactly what the golden tree does, right? It creates branches and melts down. And it makes a good symbol for midlife, doesn't it? You come up with a solution and it falls down and melts. And you come up with another one and it falls down and melts. I think it's a good symbol for how reminding us we can get contact with this primordial divine energy, and everything else, like our, you know, day-to-day things are sort of branches of that which can fall away. It's sort of a relativism, but in the context of contact with some life energy. Yeah, be Shiva and Kali. Shiva, both of them would be the ones who destroy and create the world anew. I think it's very much an alchemical symbol, particularly because the tree is supposed to have made of gold with diamonds as a flower, so that's the softest and the hardest things. Gold that isn't corruptible but it's very malleable, and of course the alchemy aim to unite those two. Is it Kristen back there? Yep.
I was struck by the similarity between the story and the birth of Christ. So that the woman who exiled, sent out into the desert or the forest, befriended by an old man, having a baby. The king, I really don't know, maybe he is the populace that recognizes the truth of what is happening.
That's a fascinating parallel between this story and the Christ's birth. And actually, it'd be an exact parallel because the king, when he sent her away, would be like Herod trying to kill off everybody. And when he goes in search of her, it would be like the three wise men, the three kings who come, who know what's valuable. They're split in the other story.
Yeah,
Yes.
There's a wonderful story that also parallels this. It was called The Search for Pedal Road by a man, Steinhoff. And it's about the fact that the king banished his daughter. And then he goes through all these tests to try to find him. To find her, and that the daughter is really a symbol of her history. And because the story is, takes place in India in the Jewish context, I would wonder what the symbolism is, because the tree is often seen in a mystical sense as the Torah or the tree of life. And if it was a visual thing, it would be curious to see how far up on the tree, because each of the branches is like an emanation of a different persona of God, a different attribute of God. And here, at the end of this particular story, he is, you know, there's a balance between good and evil. He's in this noxious, toxic substance, and yet he's not really crucified.
I think that's a good point. If you interpret it in Jewish tradition, the queen would make a good representation for the Shekinah, which was exiled from God, and man's task is to find and collect the soul again, which in this case they're successful. How about that?
In biblical commentary, it said that the kings have been given dreams to really help the country, that their dreams are much more important because they have to think about their subjects and what's going on.
Yes. And it's also true with a lot of Native American and African societies that chiefs would have the, quote, big dreams which weren't theirs but for the whole tribe. Maybe one last comment or question?
Yes. The measuring and the destroying of the gold is a wonderful symbol for non-attachment.
The symbol of making the gold is a symbol of non-attachment. Oh, yes, as he destroys it, yes. And that it's the creating, the life that he wants. Well, one other comment. This story is also parallel to one of the most famous midlife stories, the Odyssey, where here the king loses everything and has to go in all this ordeal to be reunited with his family. That's all I was going to tell you tonight, and there are more coming. This is a preview. But I just wanted to suggest that you might pay attention to your dreams tonight, because fairy tales will often trigger a lot of stuff. And also, all these stories originated with one storyteller and got developed over the years. And who knows where that inspiration came from? Probably from a dream. So one of your dreams might be another story in 1,000 years. Thanks.